Hello, I'm Steve Punce.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Fern Brady, Pierre Novelli, Jake Yap and Gemma Arrowsmith. And this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you. So, the election chuntered on this week with Labour and Liberal Democrats releasing their manifestos.
The Conservatives are keeping theirs hidden away for a couple more days, probably in the same place they've hidden Jacob Rees-Mogg until... until polling day is safely over. Tuesday, meanwhile, saw the first of the TV leaders' debates.
Yes, hard to imagine now the excitement that was created by that famous debate 9 years ago between Brown, Cameron and Clegg. In the intervening time, the novelty has worn off. Ratings are down. Clegg mania has turned into Swinsomnia. This time round, it was a head-to-head debate, whereas in 2010 it was a three-way, a change which has disappointed Boris Johnson.
The biggest story afterwards wasn't even the debate itself. It was that Conservative Election HQ had renamed their Twitter feed Fact Check UK and tweeted Tory spin disguised as objective fact. It helped, of course, that most of Britain's genuine fact-checking sites were unavailable that night, having overloaded and shut down on Saturday night, halfway through Prince Andrew's TV interview. Among the many questions they couldn't cope with were...
How can being in Woking at 5pm prevent you from being in London 5 hours later? Did he walk?
How can a photo that's been in the public domain for 8 years suddenly become fake? Hmm.
And do any waiting staff at Pizza Express Woking remember the customer who turned up with an armed policeman, said he never carried cash when the bill arrived, and asked if parking charges for helicopters stopped at 6:30? And when he was told they didn't, simply said, no sweat.
So, changing their name to Fact Check UK is a tactic that the Tories have clearly learned from the recent success of similar name-changing ploys, such as changing the name...
Theresa May's terrible Brexit deal.
...to read...
Boris Johnson's amazing Brexit deal.
Away from Twitter and on the actual screen, Corbyn went into the ITV debate with the advantage that expectations were very low. His press coverage is so scathing that all he had to do was not fall over or ask to phone a friend in order to look impressive. But by contrast, even the highest flights of Ciceronian erudition could barely match the expectations of the Johnson fan base, with the result being that in the end it was pretty much a score draw.
Of the type that Tottenham fans can soon look forward to. In the snap poll afterwards, the great messiah of Middle England only just edged the dangerous communist of Islington by 51% to 49%, or as Brexiteers would call it, an overwhelming majority.
The general opinion was that both contenders did okay. Corbyn has a reputation for being a seasoned campaigner. Johnson, of course, has a reputation for being able to talk to voters in their own language, assuming those voters are from ancient Rome, obviously. But in the end, you didn't learn that much, as Corbyn wouldn't answer any question on Brexit, while Johnson gave getting Brexit done as the answer to everything. Like his campaign had been training him for weeks.
Boris, we're just about to start the meeting. Would you like a cup of tea?
I would indeed.
No, try again.
All right, sorry. I would like a cup of tea, and that is why we must get Brexit done.
That's much, much better. Biscuits?
Oh, I love biscuits, and that is why we must get Brexit done.
This is good, Boris.
Thank you, and that is why we must get Brexit done.
Oh, this is going to drive us all mad.
Yes, it is, and that is why we must get Brexit done.
I think we all need you to stop now.
Exactly, and that is why we must get Brexit done.
Boris, please stop now.
I will stop.
Good.
When we get Brexit done.
Johnson also said during the debate that the royal family are above reproach, which was odd because the Queen herself had just reproached one of them in what the press called...
crisis talks.
But what most of us would call...
a right bollocking from your mum.
But, of course, TV debates are about more than just the debate.
Welcome to the ITV debate. We'll be seeing the two biggest beasts of British politics go head-to-head, and then we'll take you to the spin room for detailed analysis. From the spin room, we move through to the lie lounge, the propaganda veranda, and the exaggeration station, and pass through the falsity conservatory into the fiction kitchen, en route to the deception reception. Over on ITV2, younger voters get their own election debate in an exciting new format, 12 rounds between YouTubers, KSI versus Logan Paul.
The ITV format itself was new. The camera angles weren't just from the front. We also got to see Corbyn and Johnson from the rear, presumably for the millions of viewers who want to see the back of both of them.
So, with the debate out of the way, it was on to the manifestos. First up on Wednesday were the Liberal Democrats, whose pledge to ignore the referendum result and cancel Brexit outright has achieved an all-time first for the party. Never before in history have the Lib Dems alienated the moderate vote.
Civil liberties are in there. The Lib Dems manifesto also pledges to immediately halt the use of facial recognition surveillance, which is a bit odd because for most Liberal Democrat MPs, facial recognition is something they long for.
On the environment, the Lib Dems are proposing a frequent flyer tax, which would be a nightmare for pilots and cabin crew. And on Thursday, Labour's manifesto followed, and they confirmed their pledge to nationalise BT Broadband.
Which they will do as soon as they get through to someone at BT Broadband to tell them that.
Now, free broadband does sound like an enticing offer, but if I were you, I would listen very carefully to Labour's first election broadcast just to make sure it doesn't go...
And that is why I pledge free high-speed broadband for every family by 2024.
Offer applies only in the event of a working majority of 20 or above and can be withdrawn at any time. Projected cost of nationalisation may go up and probably will.
One of the few areas of agreement in the election so far, though, is over planting trees. Both the Conservatives and Labour want to plant 30 million extra trees a year, the Lib Dems 60 million trees, and the Green Party 700 million trees over 10 years.
Which is great news for the environment, but not such good news for anyone who uses trains.
We apologise for the cancellation of all services to Edinburgh Waverley. This is due to 700 million extra lots of leaves on the line.
Now, the other problem is that no one quite knows where the trees will be sourced from because 30 million trees are quite hard to get hold of and you do need to be careful.
Hello, I've got your trees for you.
Yeah, where are they from?
Amazon.
Which would at least mean they'd be cheap, because the Brazilian government are giving them away. They say they don't really want them anyway. Of course, the parties want the trees for different reasons. The Greens want them to reduce CO2 levels. The Conservatives want them for two reasons. One...
because that is how we're going to get Brexit done!
And two, so Daily Express readers don't have to touch foreign wood pulp every morning. While Labour want them because they will create new forests, which they're hoping the nation's billionaires will try and explore and lose their way within.
Halt, friend.
Who are you?
I'm Jeremy, taking from the rich to give to the poor, and these are my not-so-merry men and women.
Well, you've got a beard like Robin Hood, but why are your glasses wonky?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think my ears may be different heights.
And who's that with you?
Oh, this is Little John.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone should be a billionaire, so hand it over.
Oh, this is outrageous. I shall seek sanctuary. Probably in Monaco.
I'm not anti-business. If you wish to object, we have a very effective complaints procedure.
Thank you very much. Now, currently sporting Frank Skinner on tour and at the Garrick Theatre in January and host of the hit podcast Bud Pod, please welcome Pierre Novelli.
Influencers and lifestyle gurus are in the news again thanks to Marie Kondo's decision to open an online shop. Now, Marie Kondo is a lovely Japanese lady who is famous for a Netflix reality show where she teaches people to tidy their living quarters and fold their clothes, like a sort of soothing version of National Service. To be honest, it's mostly her telling people to throw meaningless things away, which is why it's controversial she's opened an online shop. Ah, sorry, now I know I'm talking to a Radio 4 audience here, so an online shop... it's a sort of a shop made of electricity in the sky, and everything you buy gets sent to your neighbour. Anyway... it's controversial because the ultimate anti-clutter warrior, Marie Kondo, is now selling clutter. That's right. Kondo is selling things like quartz crystals and tuning forks in a set, claiming that when you strike the tuning fork against the crystal, it will amplify its healing properties, in much the same way that striking a salami against your laptop will make you taller. Chris... Crystals, if you didn't know, are rocks from the floor that people think are magic. It's a huge and growing business. Gwyneth Paltrow's own wellness company, Goop, for example, sells a jade egg for women to put inside their vaginas for no reason. A jade egg. You must remember that a rock is only magic if it is fancy. It's a jade egg in the vagina, not a Skegness pebble in the bum. Marie Kondo is also selling quarter-pound bags of charcoal for 14 quid, which will put the prices at service stations into perspective. It's unfair to criticize only Marie Kondo, though. I had a quick look at the internet, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people at it. There are legions of diet and fitness gurus. It appears that male fitness influencers tend to focus on six-packs, while female fitness influencers tend to focus on yoga. The one thing they do have in common is a profound deadness behind the eyes. There are legions of makeup influencers helping millions of women with the impossible task of painting their own face on top of their face. And there are life hack gurus who teach you nifty tricks with everyday objects so you can save time and money. Time saved that you can then spend watching hours of pointless videos as you desperately try to make a bird feeder from recycled yogurt pots despite not having a garden. Ah, yes, sorry, I forgot. Radio 4 audience. Not having a garden... It's something that happens when no one builds any new houses and you plunge an entire generation into a crippling rent crisis. There are even mum influencers. And in a way, isn't giving birth the ultimate example of self-producing your own monetizable content? I researched some, and now even I am worried that I am a terrible mother to my children. I don't even know where they are right now because, of course, they don't exist. I was horrified by what I'd looked into, so I thought I'd find out where it all began. And this, of course, led me to the original 21st century influencer with his gripping videos and enormous media reach. It was, of course, Osama bin Laden. It is unclear how many free packs of makeup were sent to his hideout in Pakistan, but suffice to say, the US Navy SEALs haven't had to pay for lipstick since. In fact, according to Global Witness, the Taliban earn $20 million a year from selling lapis lazuli crystals they mine in Afghanistan. They would probably sell more if they claimed the crystals had magic powers, but the Taliban find that sort of thing deeply unethical. So, is this newsworthy because Marie Kondo, the enemy of clutter, has become a clutter merchant herself? No, no. That betrayal is just a part of the natural relationship between shyster and rube. No, the real problem here is that it makes all of us miserable. Bin Laden and the Taliban were the original influencers, and every influencer is psychologically a terrorist, attacking our lumpy and imperfect lives with airbrushed photos of their own fictional lives, laughing at you through perfect teeth, airbrushing their six packs and never admitting how awful it is eating nothing but fish, almonds and broccoli every day. Unfortunately, these lifestyle terrorists have deep appeal. If it's a choice between learning to be happy in yourself or buying magic berries, well, magic berries are cheaper than therapy. But we must all try and fight this pernicious force. These comparisons will make us miserable, not aspirational. We just need to be more careful online. Watch out for influencers trying to use media platforms to get people like you to slavishly follow them on their phones. And remember, this set will be available to download on the BBC Sounds app. Thank you very much.
Now, from Scotland, but currently all over the UK on tour with her show Power and Chaos, which comes to London's Duchess Theatre in March, please welcome Fern Brady.
In Britain, you can get away with anything if you have a posh accent. I make reasonable points all the time, but because of this accent, people react as if I'm a half-wit on remand from prison. Prince Andrew, an actual half-wit who hangs about with people who are actually on remand from prison... spent years getting away with stuff because he's royal and their pronunciation is just lovely. It can be hard to explain to people why you dislike the royals, so I want to thank Prince Andrew, who's made it simple after his disastrous Newsnight interview. It was so much a car crash, I'm pretty sure Prince Philip drove him to it. He finally managed to make Mary and Sarah Ferguson look like a pretty good idea. You know you're in trouble when the only person you can find to defend you is I'm a celebrity contestant, Lady Colin Campbell, but I guess eating kangaroo balls for a month has made Prince Andrew's bollocks easier to swallow. Lady Colin said that child prostitution isn't paedophilia. What is it then? Children being entrepreneurial? She's now been dropped from switching on the Christmas lights in Gloucester as a result of her comments. Merry Christmas, Gloucester. Presumably, she's going to be replaced by Katie Hopkins. Prince Andrew was criticised for staying at Epstein's New York house for 4 days after Epstein had been convicted of soliciting sex from minors, but Andrew said it was merely a convenient place to stay. He's a member of the royal family. Do his advisors not know about Trivago? He refused to express regret at being involved with Epstein because of what he'd learned and the useful people he had met. I assume one of those useful people knew how to fake a suicide. In a breathtaking display of delusional posh confidence that this country seems to run on, Andrew was going to do a second interview to make clear the points he'd left out. I don't think it was the stuff he left out that was the issue. The I can't sweat line of defence could only have been less credible if it was being said by Lee Evans. Now he's been sacked by his mum, maybe Andy could go into marketing after his attempt to rebrand being a sex offender as unbecoming. Many people complained Prince Andrew failed to acknowledge the true victims in all of this. Pizza Express Woking. The branch actually had its reviews suspended this week on TripAdvisor. Because it was getting so many inappropriate entries. Wouldn't it be nice now if Pizza Express's fortunes are turned around by this and the Woking branch stays open as a new go-to destination for American tourists after they visit Buckingham Palace? Up till now, complaints about that Pizza Express had centred around being overly expensive, tasteless and out of touch with modern values. The royal family, on the other hand... It's time for me to say goodbye, but I'll also be staying for another 4 days.
Now, TV election debates are still relatively new to this country, having been imported from the US in 2010 after a long campaign by broadcasters. Margaret Thatcher had turned the idea down 25 years earlier on the grounds that the UK elects a government and not a president. It was also Thatcher, however, who exactly 30 years ago allowed TV cameras into the House of Commons for the first time.
Yes, she did. And she did this against the objections of some of her own backbenchers, some of whom were still getting over the introducing of radio microphones in 1975. And one of whom still has reservations about allowing electric telegraphs to be installed in the building, although I think Rees-Mogg is almost over that now. Nowadays, though, it's hard to imagine not being able to see the House of Commons for ourselves and ask all those layman's questions that we all have, like, where the hell is everyone? Why is it always so empty? And why are they always moaning about kids spending too much time on their phones when they're all on their phones themselves? Now, they have commentary on parliamentary coverage now, on big nights.
Well, the opposition are furious. They think it's unparliamentary language, and they could be right.
That's going to VAR. It was certainly rude, and it was certainly insulting. But the question is, did that remark cross the line?
And from a couple of fixed cameras 30 years ago, we now have dozens of cameras giving wide shots and close-ups from all angles, plus a drone camera zooming around, tracking Chuckaramuna to whichever party... he's... decided to sit with today.
Yeah, not to forget, of course, the GoPro stuck on Chris Grayling's head so he doesn't get lost. Now, it's taken a long time to get to this, though. In the early days, politicians were very wary of television.
They were. Winston Churchill correctly predicted that it would lead to soundbite culture and reduce time to make complex arguments. Incredibly, Churchill predicted in 1948 that...
Nobody wants to see an old man in close-up on their screen. Unless he is surrounded by penguins. Then, and only then, will they watch him on the beaches. They will watch him in the breeding ground.
No, ladies and gentlemen, he never said that. But he did do the secret camera test, and he did say...
They will watch him with gorillas or with fish. They will watch him with snakes. They will watch him with weird birds that do a dance. Yes. And they will even watch him when he inevitably goes to Sky for the money.
However, Churchill would have been right.
And that is why we must get Brexit done.
Yes, of course.
Many features of modern election nights are created for television, notably the race between constituencies to get the quickest count done. In 1997, Sunderland South set the record at 10 past 11. In 1955, when the count closed at 9, Cheltenham and Salford West tied at 8 minutes past 10, although nothing can top 2016's result in Moscow Central. Where the winner was declared 10 minutes before the polls open.
And, of course, television didn't just change the night itself, it also changed campaigning. In 1960, an American presidential debate between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy was broadcast live on TV and radio. And polls showed that while radio listeners thought Nixon had won, TV viewers gave it to Kennedy.
Yeah, research showed that viewers were put off by Nixon's stubble and by the fact that even though he had served in the Navy during World War II, he was still able to sweat.
Don't understand that. Donald Trump famously loves television. Being a boomer who grew up in the golden age of TV, he gets all his information from the small screen. His own impeachment hearings, of course, are currently on TV in the US, although if you prefer, they're also being covered by a fake fact-checking service offering misleading propaganda.
It's called Fox News. And it's Trump's main source of policy ideas. America has no equivalent to the BBC in terms of a requirement for impartiality. And consequently, different TV channels give you completely different versions of events.
Yes, channel hopping in the US is a bit like being in his Dark Materials, travelling between parallel versions of reality without any alethiometer to guide you. Niche reference, I know, but I don't know what a Horcrux is, so Pullman fans get to baffle Potter fans for once. Anyway, more than one witness at the hearings has been confronted by questions they simply didn't understand. Acting Ambassador Bill Taylor and ex-State Department official George Kent proved not to be Fox News viewers and had literally never heard of the conspiracy theories that the Republican questions were based on.
Sir, are you aware that the Obama administration drugged the water supply of eastern Ukraine in a false flag operation to discredit Mr. Trump?
No, that is not true.
Are you aware that Mr. Trump could not possibly have made any phone call to Ukraine at the time you claim?
No, we have a record of the call.
That phone record is faked by a covert CIA operative placed there by Obama. Mr. Trump was not there on that day.
Where was he then?
At the Pizza Express in Woking, England.
And now, would you please welcome the host of brand new podcast, Date Fight, it's Jake Yap.
The John Lewis / Waitrose ad is out, featuring a cute little arsonist dragon who belches flames when he's excited and everyone hates him, so they decide to brick him into his house all year until they want their Christmas pudding lit. Charming. Forgive me if I sound a bit cynical about this, but the minute I saw it, I realised there'll be some factory in Hong Kong honking out a million cuddly dragons. Aldi's touting Kevin the Carrot, and there are rumours. Tesco's are working on a cuddly Terry the Turkey carcass. Why couldn't you just enjoy some festive fun, Jake? Because I can't, all right?
Back in 2012... John Lewis filled a shelf with snowman storybooks that brought them flocking. John Lewis then got wise and they realized they had a hot new take on Christmas stocking. Every Christmas since, watch every parent wince as each campaign trots out another toy. Buster bouncing in midair, the hare and the bear, a depressing but quite profitable marketing ploy. And by the way, with 7 million quid, you'd think they had a choice of hiring someone to sing this with a properly trained voice. I cannot fight the feeling that we have hit a ceiling of vapid, sickly ballads used to shift some pallets off soft toys. 2017. It all gets quite obscene when Moz the Monster brings a lump to every throat. It was going well until Chris Riddell pointed out the similarities to a book he wrote. And even if you've sorted out the tune, It won't help you with some creepy crap like the man in the moon, a 250,000-mile restraining order. I don't want to wipe your smile off, but we saw the plot twist from a mile off. It's dragging on. I want him gone. Drown the thing in Gaviscon. I'll volunteer. It'd be fantastic if Saint Nick brings a plastic albatross chick with realistic tummy popping, revealing all our shopping from last year. And I can't fight this BS anymore.
So, finally this week, we've decided we should temporarily rebrand this show as a fact-checking service. We've asked our audience, what things have you been told in your life that turned out not to be true?
Yeah, what things have you been told in your life that turned out not to be true? Don't worry, he's really quite friendly.
What were you told that turned out not to be true? That when the ice cream chimes ring, that means it's run out of Cornettos.
Have kids, it won't change your life one bit.
If you keep eating sprouts, you will learn to like them.
When I was a child, my mum told me that our pig called Nosh had gone to market. Many years later, when I was grown up, I discovered our pig had been put in the freezer and we'd eaten it. It's called Nosh, wasn't it? What things have you been told in your life that turned out not to be true? Our teacher told us that baked beans were mined underground. Where they do have the same effect as fracking. That's not.
I was told I'd get my state pension at 60. There we are. Checked a few facts there, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye. You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Fern Brady, Pierre Novelli, Jake Yap and Gemma Arrowsmith. It was written by the cast with additional material from Robin Morgan, Laura Major, Kat Sadler and Alex Keeley and Mandy Baker. The producer was Matt Strong, and it was a BBC Studios production.